Hi everyone, welcome to Life is Healing. I'm Lubaina, your host. I am a healing practitioner and I specialize in energy bodywork, shamanism, and astrology. Life is Healing is a podcast where I share my passion for healing. In the last 15 years, my journey has encompassed plant medicine, energy healing, astrology, and shamanism, which are all topics you will hear about. I'll share tips from various modalities and interviews of healing practitioners and stories from all over the world, and a fun astro update in every episode. Tune in and join me for this journey on Life is Healing. Hi everyone, welcome back to episode 3 of Life is Healing with Lubaina. Today I wanted to get started on this episode by talking about our topic of the day related to healing. What I wanted to talk to you guys about is how we can use the body as a medium or a tool for healing. In the modality that I practice, which we lovingly call Movements of Light, we use the body as a way to release tensions and tones that are stemming from deeper layers of our consciousness, creating patterns of disruption, distortions, and disturbances that create barriers for us to experience a full and vibrant life and body. So, how can we use the body as a medium for tool or healing? In order for us to understand that, we have to think of the body as a garment for spirit. So it's kind of like the way we wear our clothes. The body is worn by our spirit. And we can also think of the body as a reflection of the deeper states of our consciousness. And if we start to think of the body like that, then we realize that we can use it to elevate our consciousness. I will explain with an example. For many years, especially in my early 20s, I was carrying a lot of anger. And I had very little awareness about just how repressed some of this anger was that had been stemming from experiences I'd had in my life that I considered to be traumatic and violent. So with this anger that I was carrying around, there was definitely a disturbance that got created in my physical body in the form of my liver not functioning very well. For those of you who know Chinese medicine, in Chinese medicine, liver is the organ that processes our emotion of anger. So if we're holding on to anger for long periods of time, it only makes sense that the liver will be affected. So I remember in my early 20s how angry I was, and I remember how a lot of it was because it was repressed. It also caused a certain level of depression. So I would alternate between these states of like extreme anger and agitation, sometimes anxiety. And then the other end of the spectrum would be depression and like heavy sadness, right? And my body was reflecting that. And I was having issues with my digestion. I was having issues with, as I said, my liver. And the more I explored this emotional state, the more I explored the patterns of emotions that I was holding on to that were creating this sort of fire in my body, setting everything off, the easier it was for me to release that, the easier it was for me to overcome those patterns and let it go. And of course, this is easier said than done sometimes, but we really need to look at what we're holding on to and what that's doing to us. Once we really see the consequences of our actions and consequences of not letting go of our patterns, then we have a better motivation of what to do with them, really. So I had really, I mean, I'm making it sound as if it was so easy. I was like, ooh, I have anger and now I'm releasing it and I'm all fine. No, it was actually quite dramatic in my life anyway, because that tends to be how I learn, or at least used to be how I would learn. So it was pretty intense physical imbalances that I experienced, which propelled me to look at, okay, it's not just physical. There's something deeper going on. And I did use this modality because I had a wonderful practitioner who became my teacher, who was there to assist me with this modality. And I had many, many somatic releases. And following the session, sometimes I would have like surges of anger coming up, and I could see it. For once, I wasn't as attached to it, as like so taken over by it that I needed to do something with it, or the other end of the spectrum, which is like repressing it so much that it was going inside and affecting my organs and my states of imbalance within the body. So for once, I could actually see it for what it was, and I would watch. After some of these sessions, I would watch the anger come up, and I would see how that would affect me. And sometimes, of course, I would still, especially in the beginning, I would give into it and it would need to just come out, you know. But eventually, the period between like me watching the anger come up and the expression became long enough that it was a lot more, I don't want to say contained, because it wasn't as much about like holding it in. It was more relaxed because I could like feel the power behind that emotion, the power behind anger. It's actually one of the things that motivated me to start practicing martial arts, because I could see that it was just this like raw energy that had no channel, no outlet. So finding an outlet for this energy helped me heal my body in a lot of ways, and my body helped me heal this emotional pattern that was affecting my relationships, that was affecting my state of being for so long. So that's what I wanted to talk to you guys about. This is an example of how the body reflects our state of consciousness and how it can be used as a medium to see what's going on and release, ultimately release these patterns, so we may experience a deeper sense of well-being, a deeper sense of health. So if you guys are interested in exploring this modality or this form of healing with me, feel free to reach out and book a session. There are links underneath the video if you're listening on YouTube. There's also links in the description of the podcast if you're listening on Apple Podcast or Spotify. So feel free to click on the link on my website and shoot me a message, and I'll be happy to work with you. That's it for this particular segment today. Please stay tuned, because the next segment is going to be a wonderful conversation with one of my closest friends, Jaina from Jaina Yoga. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Life is Healing with Lubaina. I'm Lubaina, your host, and today I have with me a very special guest. She is one of my best friends. Her name is Jaina Majar, and we met in yoga school and we have been soulmates ever since. Jaina is a yoga and meditation and breathwork teacher. She is passionate about what she does and dedicated to spreading the joy of yoga to people of all ages and backgrounds. She is also a huge surf enthusiast, and I can tell you, I can personally attest that she does not leave the water ever. Even when she's on the ground, she's actually still in water. So she's a water baby. Jaina has been a teacher over the last decade, And today she partners with businesses such as Sony Music, MetLife, Noom, Rent the Runway, JetBlue, Estee Lauder, and Health Fitness to bring more wellness to corporate spaces where we know it's very badly needed. Her classes are a breath and body-based meditation practice that creates space and freedom in the body, mind, and soul through physical movements linked with breath. Her sequences are designed through the inspiration of nature, dreams, and music. We're going to go deep into that. Through it, she learned that when connecting movement with breath, a workout can become healing. So here we are on Life is Healing, the podcast. So Jaina, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today. I want to start off by talking about the big life change that you've had recently, where you left corporate America to become a full-time yoga, meditation, and breathwork coach. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired this big change for you?
Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you for this beautiful introduction. I appreciate it. What inspired me to do this step, I think it goes way back. Way back into my childhood where everything really started. If you keep going and going in life and you're in this life, you basically get to a point where you just function every day, and I like to call it the rat race. You're in it, the hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. It's hard sometimes to think, feel clear. So I've just gotten to a point after being, working at this great startup that grew into a huge firm. Mm-hmm. Grateful for all the lessons, grateful for all the things I've learned and skills I obtained. But it didn't really allow me time to really truly reflect about what I truly want to do, what truly brings me joy in life, and to really do the things that I fully love, which is, helping people to reduce stress, to live a more balanced life. And that really comes from a place of growing up in a really chronically stressed environment myself. So I'm originally from Germany. Mm-hmm. I lived in Germany about 25 years before I moved to New York City.
That's a long time.
Where we met.
We did meet in New York. Yes.
And it really started all my childhood. Growing up in a household where there was a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling. And, I love my parents so much, and at the same time it was a really stressful environment to be in as a child.
I can imagine.
Very chaotic, right? Mm-hmm. So my parents' relationship sort of crumbling and falling apart right in front of my eyes. I think I was about 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And witnessing a lot of fighting and witnessing a lot of stress and going through a lot of stress. That is really, really hard. That's really challenging. And then my mother getting sick with cancer.
Wow.
That was, I think, a really turning point in witnessing such hard challenges as such a young child. I think that really led me to, and I just recently realized that really got me into a place of being locked into the fight flight mode. When we talk about the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, which is a big part of my breath coaching, to really regulate the nervous system and hack the nervous system in a way. So can I shift from the parasympathetic system, from the rest and digest, into the fight and flight, the sympathetic, back and forward, and be in control of that? I think I got locked into that fight-flight mode when I was very little. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, for most of my childhood, probably for more than a decade, without realizing it. Mm. And I know from conversations from my clients, from the coaching, that a lot of people do, and a lot of people are very unaware of it, the way I was unaware of it, I think it just recently clicked for me. Mm-hmm. And there's this one thing that that just sort of came up for me recently, where when I went through the studies, when I became a breath coach a couple of years ago, where I always had like dilated pupils. So the black part of my eyes was always really, really big when I was a child, my whole childhood through. And people always made fun of me, and they were like, oh, you basically have no eye color. So you have like black eyes, like you couldn't see my iris, you couldn't see the colored part. But having like constantly dilated pupils is just one of the many signs that you're in the fight flight mode, because you're sort of, you know, your whole system, your whole body's like, you know, ready to defend in attack mode, right? I got to protect myself. I got to like the long distance vision. So that's just anecdotally, like it's just like a small nuanced thing that came up for me while I was exploring deeper levels of breath coaching, my own story, and growing up in this stressful environment. So being stuck in that, long story short, since so little, not realizing and going through so much pain, and I think so much unnecessary pain throughout the last few years, and, you know, could have been more balanced out. But there was not really anybody who was showing me that path. So I sort of, my mission is, you know, to help people live more balanced and become more aware of the nervous system and become more aware of the breathing, which controls our nervous system, controls the heart rate, controls a lot of things in the body and how healthy we actually live. That's sort of my mission, you know. And then challenging people, how they relate to spirituality, right? Okay. Spirituality is this like huge like thing, and like, you know, a lot of people, everybody has a different idea what spirituality is.
Yeah. So let's talk about what you mean by spirituality when you use that word, because I know everybody has their own sort of definition of spirituality and what it means for them, because for some people it might be a religious practice, for others it's more new age. So what do you mean when you say spirituality?
What do I mean when I say spirituality? I do think first and foremost, spirituality for me is to really deeply be in touch with myself. How am I in touch with myself? Well, I think there's a constant challenge between being or getting stuck too much in the head, being in the mind, versus dropping really into the heart. And that's so nuanced, you know, it's so deep. It's something you experience. It's something that we try to intellectualize, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's a really deep exploration, and it requires practice to be able to really truly experience dropping out of the mind and into the heart space. The access point for me into my own spiritual self is, or spirituality is through the breath, right? Through the breath. So if we just purely look at the breath, you know, we all know it's a basic biological function, you know, in order to survive, we got to absorb O2 and, you know, exhale and let out CO2 out of the body. And yet there's so much more to the breath. There's so much more. So when I begin to work with new clients, it is a lot about the theory aspect of what is actually happening, right? I want people to understand the biological function, interoception, what is happening within my body, how are things working? So, you know, I would take a deep dive into all the functions of breathing, how things work, because there is truly magic that happens, right? The way the breath works, the exchange that's happening between CO2 and O2, which can get very theory heavy in the beginning. But then after, you know, a couple of sessions, it really opens up this whole new world of, oh, suddenly now I learn how to coordinate my breath differently. I learn how to move my breath differently through my body, which then begins to impact my nervous system. Okay, so then if I slow down my breathing and I deepen my breath, I impact my heart rate. So then when I impact my heart rate, I have an influence on a lot of things. My stress levels, my weight, the way I sleep, how much I sleep, pain management. So I think what I'm observing and what I've learned is that a lot of people actually think that we're not breathing enough. You know, we got to breathe more, but it really is more about the balance of O2 and CO2. Like always in life, you know, everything needs to be in balance. You know, I'm a big fan of that, like that idea, like everything needs to imbalance how we consume. So, you know, we see that we have not only become overeaters in this society, but we also, most of us have become overbreathers. So when you walk outside, you walk in the grocery store, and you just begin to watch people and how they breathe, you will see that people breathe very high up into their chest. You know, it's all happening up here. They may raise their shoulders, the accessory muscles, everything for breathing. So people are, and a lot of people actually, since COVID particularly, are stuck in a place of fight flight without realizing. And we can get stuck in that mode for years, as you've seen with me, right? I've been stuck for most of my life in fight flight mode without realizing it. Okay, so that causes, like, you know, at some point, it definitely causes you a lot of distress in the mind. It causes you a lot of distress in the body. Then you get injured. Then you get like chronic pain and all of the things, right? So I guess my mission is to just really help people become aware of how much we are actually can be in control of our health and how important respiratory health is for our overall well-being. And then on a deeper level, once we've moved through all the theory and how things work and the O2 and CO2 and all of this, it becomes a very spiritual practice.
Okay,
so then, like, I rediscover in a way my breath again.
So I like how you're talking about the simplicity of connecting with the breath and using the breath to balance ourselves, to come out of our heads and be more aware of the heart. When you're talking to me, it's also sounds like coming into the body and becoming aware of the sensations that are all around, and using, like, you, I was in a recent class with you where you used scents and movement and sounds to create a very sensory experience, right? And breath was part of it. And I think, like, the breath can be used as a way to really come back into our bodies and to experience like what is actually going on, rather than being connected to just what we think is happening. So I like what you said about how these practices came to you as a result of really what sounds like a certain level of childhood trauma of being in a stressful environment. So tell us a little bit more about how you were inspired to find these practices. Like, was there an influence in your house, or like, how did you find yoga? How did you find breath work? How did you find meditation?
Yeah. I think that's a really awesome question. Like, it all started, as I mentioned, in my childhood through those hardships, you know, the divorce of my parents, my mom getting really sick, not knowing with being 5 years old, if she's ever going to return back from the hospital, sort of getting ready and for death with 4 years, like being 4 year old, like little girl, you know, she went for treatment every day and I never knew she would come back. There was always, and I was very aware, you know, there were, I guess I can't remember everything, but there were conversations happening around, well, we don't know if she's going to make it. And when you're 4 years old, like, you kind of don't understand what that means, but you also, to a level, you're like, okay, like, maybe my mother, I'm not going to see my mom ever again. And like, that has really shaped things for me in a way, you know, like, I think being confronted with death so early on in life
where I'm like literally just like, I was just born basically, right? Like, and then 4 years later, I'm like, okay, death is a thing. I think that has really shaped me, and that really, I think, was the first time, maybe not with, I mean, 4 years old, I didn't have a spiritual practice. But my mom, very early on, when she's healthy today, she's made it through actually two cancers at this point.
Wow.
So she's a warrior.
She's a warrior.
Wow. So she's good, she's healthy, and she's doing well. And we, you know, God gave us so many more years. And I'm so deeply grateful for that. But she early on, after her first treatment and making it through, introduced me to all of her spiritual books. So I'm coming from a place where I already had someone who was able to introduce me to the spiritual world. And when I say spiritual, again, it's like deeply in touch with yourself, deeply in touch at the same time with a higher power.
Mm.
You know, you may call it God, you may call it universe, the cosmos, the galaxy, the inner galaxy, which is also the outer galaxy, and all together. So she introduced me to all of her books. My mom was a big reader, so she would have like a library of things. And for the longest time, maybe I really didn't touch many books myself, even though I had access every day. I was not a big reader.
What kind of books were these?
It was mainly books about death. Death and mediumship books.
Oh,
so my mom is a medium,
mm-hmm.
and she has the capability to connect with, I want to call it, the other side.
Mm-hmm.
She's very psychic. She's very intuitive. She's an intuitive, and I guess I got a little spark of that.
I was gonna say, you know what? You're talking about your mom as if you don't have it. But as long as I've known you,
yeah.
I've noticed that you've also basically inherited
right.
what your mom has.
Yeah.
And you have your own version of it.
Right.
And even when I was reading out your bio, it says that your practice is inspired by dreams
yes.
as well. So is there a connection between what you're mentioning with the mediumship and your mom and what you went through when you were a kid and the influence of the work
right.
that you're doing now?
Yeah, very much.
Mm-hmm.
Very much. So
let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she introducing me to her dream books, to her spiritual books, to her death books, to the other side books, and all of it, right? The love and what we are and beings, and that the big aspect of we're not just a mind, we're also not just a body at all, but there's this thing which is called the soul.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, and she would read me books from, you know, children books about like what the soul is.
Wow.
And so, you know, I really loved it. Your cute stories and, you know, about actually like, you know, there's one story I remember about a child that was passing away. And, you know, often children are still in this very intuitive space where they actually connect, like they have psychic abilities without realizing. They see these friends. Right.
Yeah, it's like it's more natural. So many kids have imaginary friends,
yeah.
but it's really because they're seeing
yeah.
other dimensional
right.
beings. Yeah.
So I didn't have that back then, but she read me books about it.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's cute. All right, they have friends. And I'm like, I want to have friends too. But it didn't come through yet. I guess I was very still in my fight flight, distracted, like wasn't connected with myself.
Now, did your mom... like, was it a commonplace thing for her to talk about her experience of the dead or talking to the dead? Was that something that she did?
Yeah.
Expose you to?
Oh,
when you
totally.
Were a kid?
Yeah. She was like, you know, my mom, I was said to my mom, well, you should keep a dream book and
mm-hmm.
Write your dreams down because you have these amazing, incredible dreams about all the things and psychic abilities to see and what's happening in the future. And,
mm-hmm.
To, you know, to predict things before they happen, and to be able to use your dreams and to guide yourself, to guide family, to guide people. And she's like, yeah, I'll one day I'll get this book and write it down. And till this day, she doesn't. and she used me as her book, basically.
You were her journal.
I was her journal. I was her, like, you know, human form kind of journal, walking journal. And she would tell me every day about her dreaming. And, you know, maybe that was also her way of processing things. And I didn't mind it. So she's been telling me about all the things. And now as I'm saying it, I realize, you know, I'm sure it's done things to me as well. Like, taking in all this information has, in one way, opened me up and desensitized me in a way, or made me feel very chill and comfortable with all of the
wooey things.
The wooey things and the things beyond what we see with our physical eyes, right? It has opened me up, I guess, to our other senses. What do you say here?
Yeah,
the other senses. The other senses.
Yeah.
I feel very comfortable around people who have these experiences. I actually get very excited about it, you know.
Yeah.
And so she's been dreaming, and I guess the dreaming access point has opened up for me too, but not for most of my life. Just recently, when I moved to New York from Germany.
That's interesting that a life transition is what brought that on. Yeah,
through diving deeper, where we got to know each other in the yoga training.
Yeah,
through 2019.
Yeah,
you know?
So you weren't shocked when I said the weird things that I said.
Not at all. I was like, nice, finally someone to talk about things, you know, that does, you know, most people, yeah, a lot of people, I mean, without wanting to be judgmental, but like, I understand, you know, if you don't grow up with it, if you're, you know, it sounds a little bit, it can be a little scary.
Scary or crazy,
crazy,
you know? Yeah, totally.
Right.
I can understand why people would think that.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't remember if I told you, but there's this show called Undone.
Mm.
It's on Amazon Prime, and it plays with the idea of, it's a story of this this woman who either is schizophrenic, or she's like a gifted medium and shaman and a healer. And it really, and the story doesn't really ever make a conclusion. It gives the viewers all sides of it, you know, and leaves it open to interpretation, right? But, and I find this fascinating because I think that the way that we look at mental illness in the Western world is not healthy. You know, because we don't acknowledge anything we can't see, smell, touch,
right,
or hear,
right.
Right? By the way, if you guys hear any noise in the background, we have animals here. We have a cat sleeping here and a doggy that desperately wants to jump on our laps, just so you're aware. So I find it fascinating that indigenous cultures actually believed people when they said that they could see spirits.
Yeah.
They believed them when they said that they had connection to the other worlds or other beings, or saw the future or had like premonitions and such things. And that's present in indigenous cultures in India. It's present in indigenous cultures of the Native American culture, South American culture. Like, wherever you go, the ancient people, so to speak, like our ancestors, believed that this was normal, you know, and I'm using air quotes because for them, it was not out of the ordinary. It was just another function that people would have in society. Those were the healers. Those were the shamans. Those were the herbalists, the medicine women, the medicine men, because they had access to these senses.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that it's very fascinating that your mom made it commonplace for you, so you never had to like question, oh, like, am I crazy for having these dreams?
Yeah.
Am I crazy for having these
things?
You know,
it's like opening.
Yeah.
I mean, there is certainly moments.
Sure.
Where, you know, you're like,
question.
All right. And also, it's a lot to process and to learn how to be able to process everything that you may experience and see in dreams. You know, it's like, it's very real. You know, it's not like, it's, I don't know sometimes I wonder if dream or dreaming is the right word for it. If it's more like visioning things, it's very, it feels like an actual experience. Like I'm actually, you know, going somewhere, experiencing something really deeply. And like you wake up and most times you don't really feel very energized. You know, feel pretty tired when you wake up. It's like, hey, I've been just on a, like a trip or something. And I just came back. Like, you know, the plan was to sleep, but it didn't really. Anyways. But yeah, and she got introduced by her grandmother.
So it's like a lineage, also was common back in the day for not just, you know, skin color and eye color to be passed down, but gifts to be passed down, you know, or what was considered gifts back in the day.
Yeah.
So how do your dreams influence your work or your visions, however you want to describe them?
I mean, they do influence in a way that they open me up. Like I do my lot of shadow work in my dreams, right? So I think when we think about this idea of wounded healer, you know, I'm in a place where I feel honored to be able to step into a place where I can help guide or help facilitate healing for people through the breath, through the yoga, through the meditation. Not doing it for them, but allowing them, like, hold space, create space for them to go through their own healing journey, or through that journey where they learn to live a more balanced, healthy life, right? Cultivating more peace and joy within. Then if I can do my own shadow work in my dreams, you know, like, the more I experience, the more I move through my own pains, my own wounds, the more I realize I can hold pain and love in my heart at the same time. And I come to my clients with from a very different state of being. You know what I mean? Like I work through my own shadow work. Okay. Like I have certain dreams that move my heart in a certain way. I may wake up with a little bit of a heaviness. I realize I have to process things through, right? Maybe with my therapist or with friends or through my own practices and come and from that place. And with those experiences, I come from a very different place to my students, you know, and I take my job very seriously, you know, in a sense that, you know, I do bring that to my classes and influence my classes with what I'm learning in my dreams, what I'm learning through healing my own pain. But at the same time, there's a fine line. Like, you know, I'm there to provide space for people.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a fine line of setting the boundaries of leaving some of that obviously outside and being there and present for the students.
Totally. Now, you talked about shadow work, right? So I wanna go a little bit into that because I feel like it's a topic that people like to shy away from doing, like the grunt work that comes with healing. Everyone's like, yeah, we're just going to breathe and be positive and love and light. Everything is, you know, so what does that mean for you? What does doing shadow work mean for you?
Well, it does mean hard work in a way, you know. It does mean working with my therapist through what is neurologically going on for me, what's going on with my thoughts, working through always, like, with her guidance, moving through my thought process. It also means having really heartfelt conversation with my friends about what's going on within, right? Processing things that I may dream, processing things that may happen in my childhood. It also means, you know, bringing my conversations from...
Oh, there comes the puppy. We're just saying hi. This is Gracie. Wants to be in the frame. We're going to let her be in the frame and keep talking about shadow work.
Buddy.
It's okay.
Okay. There we go.
Talking to my therapist and learning what is going on, like in terms of thought patterns, working through that. And I think a big part for me personally is finding that expression. Like, it's been always so important for me to not only think through things and like take time to reflect, but also like really in conversation with therapists, friends, family, express, like get it out of my throat, like express and verbalize what has been happening, what I've been feeling, what I'm feeling now, how I felt a while ago. And like, I think that's been big part of my shadow work, to actually express it and not have it like get stuck here, but then also manifest as injuries and pain in my body, right? And it took me a long time to get there. Like, I started working with my therapist maybe 3-4 years ago, on and off, but like regularly, and it's been opening up like great things for me, you know. And I have to keep going back in order to express and talk about emotions, feelings, experiences, because so quickly we just, you know, we're in this like daily routine and we don't get to express what's happening, and there's a suppression of things happening. So I think in terms of shadow work, you know, going back through that childhood trauma. So I grew up in a world early on where, for me, the world is an unsafe place. Parents don't work out, they divorce. I don't know where I'm going to end up. Mom gets really sick. So the world is not really a safe place to be. Mm-hmm. That's like baseline.
Okay.
So this is how life starts. And then from there, I guess a lot of suppression. I never went with my parents to therapists. I never sought any professional help. I was just started seeking that now as an adult myself. And that turns into eating disorder. When you're, you know, that turned into an eating disorder for me when I was about 19 years old. So if everything externally seemed to be out of control, okay, what's the first thing for me to control? Food intake. So that turned into an eating disorder, which I completely did not realize, wasn't aware at that time. My mom got remarried one more time, and quickly it didn't work out. Like right after marriage, right after she got married to her second husband, it didn't work out and she got divorced again. So it seemed like she was trying it more for her children than for herself, which she also has expressed. So I think hearing that, seeing that, and experiencing that is like, wow, okay. This is like very complex and a lot to take in, being 19 years old and with everything that already happened. So then I'm like, okay, let me control the eating. And that really derailed. So I was, you know, not eating much. It's basically anorexia for a while, and it was like great, like, you know. Also then, interestingly, getting more attention from society, and
because
I was skinnier, it was like, let's keep going.
It's like a different validation. You get. You're like, okay, now I'm really in control, because not only have I control over what I'm eating, but now I'm getting validated for this behavior.
Exactly.
So it's like this reward
for like
the control exerted.
Exactly. So it's like keep going, like you're doing the right thing. And so I think that was pretty intense. Until then, my mom was like, okay, this is really derailing, like you're not really eating anything anymore. And that was really dark time, which then eventually, once I she then actually connected me with a medium / therapist.
Oh, that's cool.
Natural healing practitioner. That she was like, okay, like she literally, there was one day I remember, she was like, we can't continue like this. She picked up the phone and she said, I'm gonna call her now right in front of you, and then I'm gonna pass you on the phone so you can figure out when you want to meet her, because I cannot keep watching you doing this. I'll never forget this moment, because I was a moment of also surrender. Because when you have an eating disorder, all you do is no, I'm fine, no, I'm not controlling, I'm eating, like, and you know, like, you don't, but you just keep suppressing, you're trying to keep the facade up. And because, you know, it's the only thing I can control, the only thing I want to do, you control so hard.
Mm.
So then, yeah, I scheduled my first appointment and got the help. And she was luckily, and I think that's exactly what I needed back then, because I felt home. She had also psychic abilities.
Hmm. A therapist.
Yeah. So she was like, literally, I had a conversation with her, and she was like, in the middle of a conversation, she's like, shut up there in the background. And I'm like, and I was like, whoa. Like, she's like, hanging out here and there, and like,
she's like, I'm not just a therapist for the living,
exactly. And I'm like, all right, she's like, it's just people hanging out everywhere. And I'm like, okay, are we at and gone or are we good? So I was like, you know, it's funny because it was home for me, this is how I grew up. You know, my mom kept seeing spirits everywhere, and she was also, besides her dreaming, and that was a big part of how I grew up. Her grandmother saw also spirits, so it's passed down. So it didn't scare me at all. It kind of made her like confirm, okay, I think this is the right person to work with. So that's my introduction to therapy.
Okay.
And
that's a pretty unconventional introduction.
It is, but it was kind of fun. So then, yeah, from there I got the help. But then, that really sprouted me into, once I got my eating a little bit more, I don't want to say back under control. Control.
Once the eating was balanced. More out of control.
Out of control, exactly. Back into balance.
Yeah.
Which it took about probably another 5-6 years before I really felt like I really got out of the overthinking, the eating thing. And
eating disorders can be hard.
Yeah.
You know, also it's this whole thing with the body, you know?
Yes, like body image.
Body image and really like feeling this discomfort about how the body is. I've dealt with an eating disorder myself.
Yeah,
mine was not anorexia. It was more more overeating and anxiety eating and stuff, emotional eating and stuff like that. But I also had a similar experience when working through it, which was like the having to really look at why you're doing that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
That's the shadow work.
That's
it's like
the shadow work,
looking at why that's there, and then making peace with what's there.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Making peace with the body as it is, and making peace with the food that we actually need to live.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, I think also that the way that social media portrays women, you know, I'm like, wow, it really encourages a certain level of, what would you call it? A certain level of, because I'm struggling to find the word for it, you know?
It's just like this, I know this is a term being, like, people throw it around, like, everywhere, but, like, I think there's, cliches are cliches because they're true.
Hmm.
You know, I think, I often think, and this term of toxic positivity.
Hmm. Okay.
Only good vibes, you know? Like, I want only the good vibes. Like, I really do.
Hmm.
But they come with the shadow work, you know?
I also think it's not possible for there
it's
to only
possible.
Be good vibes.
Exactly.
That's not life.
It leads
to
suppression, right?
Yeah.
So that's a suppressing kind of way of living. So, and accepting the ups and downs of life, right?
Yeah.
And then I think in social media, and I meant to touch on that too, because I think it's actually great to be on the podcast here and talk about.
Let's be on social media and talk about social media.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's break through this, you know, idea of perfection. And I think often the way we look, present ourselves, and yeah, you look at my social media, and you know, that's one piece I want to work on. And that's why I decided to come to the podcast as well, because I'm like, I want to open up about all the dark things as well. You know, like that's what connects us all. Like that's what connects us all, that we're going through this, you know, human experience, and we're here and got incarnated to, you know, we signed the contract. Soul contract, right? There's an agreement. We're here for lessons, and grouped in these soul groups to learn a larger lesson, and then a very individual lesson as well. And I think just recently, like within the last few years, I really truly opened up to that and accepted that, you know, this life for me is, it should be as joyful as possible, as vibrant as possible, as healthy as possible. But through the hard work, I think this is how it becomes vibrant, joyful, you know? And again, holding both at the same time. You know, just because I do shadow work doesn't mean I'm running around the whole time complaining and being like depressed.
I mean, I don't think complaining is actual shadow work. I think complaining is
about
other...
the shadow work, right?
Yeah, complaining is a different kind of vibration. You know, I think like when we complain, we're trying to even intellectualize what we're feeling,
right?
And just like talking about it rather than being like, you know what, I just don't feel good, you know, so I'm just going to complain about it. I don't feel good. And I think unnecessary negativity is optional, right? And at the same time, there's the word that comes to me is authentic, you know?
Yeah.
There's most of social media is not authentic. You know,
yeah.
And that's why I think it's important for there to be voices like yourself,
exactly.
Like myself, who we do put ourselves on social media.
It takes a lot of women.
And we do put ourselves on social media. And there's like, even for this podcast, it's like, oh, how do we want this to look? And how do we want to look? How do we want to appear? And at the same time, having the space to understand that, like, just what's being portrayed is not all there is. It's never that. So what's really behind the scenes? What's behind the perfectionism, you know?
Yeah.
What's behind that need for control, like what you were describing
yes.
with what you went through?
Right. Oh, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think it is, it becomes more and more important in this world and for us as the human collective to break through this. And obviously social media doesn't make it easier, right? There's this, like, what did you call it, this spirit, social media spirituality, or the other way around?
Oh, I called it social media spirituality.
There is a social media
spirituality that comes from just being on social media, the influencers,
right?
Who are out there making the world a higher vibration.
And like, honestly, I think they're out there, and like, I, you know, I do like to put my reels out there and like do some cool fancy yoga poses and help people out. Can you do this and that and be more whatever flexible or play around with posts? But I think it always comes down to keeping the balance and keeping yourself in check. So keep myself in check. I keep myself in check by my practices, by meditating every single morning without any distraction, any voice, sound, music, anything, just in silence and really dropping truly into my spirit. You know, spirit is just like, you know, we were talking about, oh, the sun is back in New York.
Oh,
you know,
God.
It makes me feel so good because it was so cloudy, right? I'm such a sun.
Yeah,
like,
oh my God.
I
was
goddess.
Born in a tropical country.
I wasn't.
So
but...
winters in New York are...
Well, you should see Germany. It's way worse. So.
Winters in New York to me feel like a spiritual practice because I can, you know, if I can accept that.
Yeah. So
I can accept
it. Yeah, it's a practice in itself.
It's a practice in itself.
But yeah, the sun is back and I'm like, okay, this is it. Like, light being needs light. So when I speak about spirituality, when I speak about my soul, my spirit, and then I'm speaking about the light being that I am, made up of energy, and it goes way beyond this physical body, that goes ripples into across multiple avenues, maybe, you know, this light being and then our aura. And I do truly think you feel that if you're a little bit in tune with yourself, I think you do feel, you step into a room and you feel people's energy. And I think it doesn't often, I think a lot of people are more intuitive than they think
are,
you know, they think, you know, they're more, if they really just, they just, I think a lot of people don't trust their own intuition.
Yeah. That's a big thing, I think, in...
Right?
For pretty much everybody.
It's being intellectualized,
but
right?
we've been conditioned to not trust our intuition.
Yeah, totally.
We've been conditioned by society, and it's not like, oh, society at large. It's just what we've experienced for a good number of years now. I mean, your story is unique in the sense, like, most kids don't get exposed to mediumship by their moms, you know, or they're not told, like, there's such a thing as soul and life beyond this physical plane. That's not something that most kids are told. In fact, if anything, they're told that their imaginary friends are imaginary,
right,
that, you know, maybe they had a dream about something that happened and that was just a coincidence.
Yes.
You know, so we're taught to shut down our intuition. But if we really learn to live from our intuition, it's always guiding us, you know, and we may or may not listen. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we listen, the more aligned we feel, and we can navigate some really tough waters if we trust that process.
Listen and practice, right? Because you sharpen your intuition, or you numb it, or like, it's like you learn a language, almost a new language. And like, you can unlearn it by, if you like, I used to speak fluent Spanish and I don't speak so fluent anymore because I didn't use it. So my mom also taught me to practice to sharpen my intuition with like little techniques and things.
Mm.
Oh, which elevator is going to open up? It's almost like a weekly thing. I do. Mm. I think the one in the middle, I think the one on the right, and it's just a fun thing to practice. But it is, I mean, if you do it for a bit, like, it's just like little techniques to
mm-hmm.
to sharpen and to see where am I at with my instincts, you know, just like an animal, it's instinct, like they feel the weather change and they feel things, and we have it too, we're nature, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very interesting
And now we've talked about spirituality, we've talked about intuition, we've talked about mediumship, we've talked about dreams, and we've talked about breath and movement. We've talked about a lot of different things, but how does all of this, can you give us like a very brief sort of overview of how all of this connects when you're working with someone?
Well, I like to think about this, and I often use this and explain this to my students in class. You know, I think the mind is the builder, the body is the house, and the spirit is the light in the house. So I think coming from a place with all these experiences, the shadow work, the trauma, the this, the that, like almost from a place of the wounded healer, the wounded teacher, you know, I'm like far from perfect. Like, I'm such a mess, you know, and sometimes my life is a mess. And working through that connects me obviously deeper to myself and then to my clients and customers or my students.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do see them coming in with a stress level, you know, ask them quickly, how are we doing? Like, I sense their energy, I sense there's, you know, it's that bringing back that light in their eyes, the spark, you know, they come in with a little bit of a dull, like, I don't want to sound judgy. No, like, they come in with the thoughts, with things, with, you can feel like, you know, there's things happening, and then allowing them through my own experiences, through my own pain, my own work, to access a deeper state of consciousness, and through the breath, through the movement, through the meditation, through the constant reminder of come back to your breath, come back to your breath, come back. It's so simple, but the breath is so, I think, so underestimated and so downplayed. The breath opens up completely new doorways, I think, into our subconscious, conscious being, and allows us to keep coming back. And I do in fact think that yoga is breath and breath is yoga, you know? So there's no, I teach yoga and then I bring in the breath, you know what I mean? Yoga is the breath. So if you chill out in child's pose for an hour and just breathe, you're doing yoga, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I hope I can challenge people in gentle ways to relate in new ways to spirituality, and that it's not this like far-fetched, like, weird thing, woo woo. I mean, I love woo woo. You know, we love woo woo. But like,
even call it woo anymore.
I don't
want to
call woo woo. Like, it's cool stuff. And like, I think once you open up to things are not coincidences. I have intuition. I'm an instinctively being. there is a deeper, there's a spirit, the light in my house, the house that carries me through life, the mind, the builder who helps me to make good decisions when I'm at a decision point in life that keeps, you know, I also say like an unfocused mind is vulnerable to the world. So we got to stay sharp in the mind as well, you know, keep it like, keep a clear head moving through the world. Problem solving, all of it, the mind, great. But then again, like constantly keep dropping back into the heart space and into the spirit. And bringing all of those three into a harmony. That's what I'm trying in my classes, you know, my with my students through the breath. So I think it's great.
The breath links all of them.
It all links all of them. Yeah. And it's a great, simple way, you know. And I actually always start my classes with breathing. And for some people, it's really hard. You know, you go to yoga class and the teacher tells you, well, okay, let's just do some grounding breathing. Let's drop into your breath. Notice your breath. And honestly, for a lot of people, they don't know how to drop into their breath because it's so automatic. It happens without you needing to control anything, hence autonomic nervous system, automatic. And people don't know. So I'll be like guiding them, you know, bring their mind to certain points in their body. And then eventually, you know, now notice your right hip. Notice your left ankle. Bring your mind to the base of your spine. Now bring your awareness to your breath. You notice the air inhaling, tickling the inner rings of your nostrils. You notice the air exhaling the nostrils, touching the space in between your nostrils and your upper lip. So you really fine tune that. And the more better your coordination of breath, your awareness of breath comes, I mean, it's for me, breath is the direct highway access point to spirit, to your true self, authentic true self. So I'm hoping that I can use the breath and the breath coaching combination with the meditative point of class. Like this is not, my classes are not a physical exercise. I'm literally there throwing in postures just to distract your mind, to keep coming back to the breath and keep coming back to the pose. So you actually drop out of your head. Like I'm just like, my job is just to distract people with poses. So they come out of their head and they come into in their actual body and have an embodiment. Because we forget we have a body. We forget that there's more. We're just like all here. And like, by the way, I'm all here all the time. I've been there all the time too. So for me, it's a practice to, again, like, dropping out of the, I'm perfect, I'm the perfect yogi, perfect teacher coming in and teaching them about all the great things. I struggle hard with it. I'm a Gemini. I'm like, here.
Geminis love to be in the head.
And also here, I feel deeply. I feel deeply, but I also think deeply. So for me, it's a constant practice. And I hope that I can bring that to my students authentically, being like, I'm a mess. I struggle. Like, let me help you because I learned some great stuff that I think you can. You don't need to struggle as hard as I did.
We learn together.
We learn together.
Yeah.
I get very passionate.
That's good.
So
being passionate is good. That means you care.
I do care a lot. I do care a lot.
So what, well, you know what? Let's talk about how people can get in touch with you if they want to work with you. If they're passionate about getting back into their bodies, they're feeling like they need to de-stress, they're feeling like they need some support. Talk about who this is for and how they can get in touch with you.
Literally, breathing and breath coaching, breath work is for anybody. You know, you don't need any experience, any age, obviously any background. I love to meet different people from different backgrounds, and it also can be done. I work with most clients online. So it kind of sounds weird maybe because it's like, oh, like how do we do breath online? But it works pretty well. So my offerings are like internationally all around the world, no matter where you are. I work with most clients online and they can connect with me via my website, Victoria Majar. Victoria, now we have to start with that.
So a big thing that happened for Jaina is her name, right? So her name is also Victoria,
Jaina
but
Majar.
She was, born Jaina.
Jaina. I was born Jaina. My whole entire world in Germany, colleagues, like family, nobody calls me Victoria. I have this thing where when big shifts in my life happen, I change my name.
Hey, you know,
I
just,
believe
just,
names is energy.
Just mess with the identity. Why not?
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's energy. I truly believe it's energy. If I keep hearing this name everywhere, every name has a meaning. There's a frequency. I'm a former musician too. So I used to sing in opera, play guitar and piano. So for me, sound, that's why also my classes are always with soundtrack, always with sounds, the senses and everything, heavily influenced. But yeah, so I changed, again, now I'm changing back. So my whole life until 25 years, I've been like Jaina. And then I'm like, oh, I come to the States. Victoria sounds nice. I feel like I need a Victoria because Victoria means victory.
Victory,
so
yeah.
I've got to go to the States and immigration is a whole different podcast.
We're not going to go into that today.
No.
So,
but,
so what's your website?
Website victoriamajaryoga.com, which I have to change.
To jainamajaryoga.com.
Yes, exactly.
But for now, Victoria, can you spell that out?
Can you spell it out?
Yeah, sure. So it's Victoria, which I think is easy to spell, V-I-C-T-O-R-I-A, Majar, which is
M-A-D-J-A-R,
yoga, Y-O-G-A.com.
Exactly.
I'm going to throw in some links, make it easy for people.
Yes.
So you can get in touch with her through her website.
Yes.
Anything else that you want to
through
share?
Social media, of course.
Of course.
Instagram,
yeah,
is my main thing,
yeah,
where I like to talk about stuff.
What's your
too.
Handle on Instagram?
It is changing, but I'm gonna take it incrementally. You find me still under Vic Majar.
Vic Majar. Okay,
Vic
cool.
Majar.
We're gonna throw links down and you'll be able to find it easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any last words for our audience? Anything that you wanna leave them? What do you wanna leave them with?
What do you wanna leave them with? I think I would just love to connect with more people, and I feel very honored to be helping people to find their own path, happiness, joy in life, playfulness, passion, deeper love, and in that sense, being able to guide people to wake up to the lesson of love, which I truly think is the whole point of our existence.
Very good note to finish on. Well, thank you so much for being
yes,
on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to our audience for listening. And we look forward to any feedback you have. Do get in touch with me. My information is always also going to be right down there for you in the links, so you can get in touch with me as well. Let us know what you think, if you have any comments or questions for Jaina or myself. And until next time, stay well and talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
To the astrological segment of Life is Healing with Lubaina, episode 3. Today I wanted to talk about moon signs. A few days ago we had the new moon in Taurus, and if you haven't read the astrological update about that, please go to my Facebook or Instagram and you'll be able to read all about all things of moon in Taurus. But what I wanted to cover today is, how does the moon sign in our charts influence us? Now, if we think of the sun as our core personality, that's easy for us to express and easy for us to recognize in ourselves and what others recognize in us as well. You can think of the moon as the shadow side, but not necessarily shadow in the sense of dark, but rather shadow in the sense of what's more subconscious, what's more hidden from plain view, right? So I will say that the moon sign is extremely important. And sometimes in astrology, it's considered that if you're a female, the moon sign influences you even more than the sun sign. And if you're a male, sometimes the sun sign influences you more. This, of course, depends on which astrologer you're talking to and also what the moon is doing in the chart. Because if it's a strong moon, then that person will become very lunar, right? Or loony, who knows? So the moon sign works in our shadows, in our subconsciousness, right? So for example, if you're an Aries sun sign, the sun sign will give you certain Martian Aries qualities that are gonna be easy for you to express and easy for others to recognize in you. You know, there's a certain vibrancy about Aries, even if they're like quote unquote shy, which can happen if they have a softer moon sign, of course. But even the sort of shy Aries, they have a vibrancy about them, you know, an excitement about them. However, and an Aries person is not very subtle. Usually they're very direct. They're very straightforward. They say what's on their mind, right? They're not subtle. They're like, you know, Aries ram charging forward. However, if an Aries person has a Scorpio moon, they will be hiding things because Scorpio likes to hide things. They love secrets. They love to keep things within and keep everyone guessing. And also because they're a little bit suspicious of everybody. You know what I mean? So the moon sign can really change that aspect of this Aries sun sign personality, right? So think of the moon sign as the feminine archetypal energy in your chart that influences your behavior more unconsciously than consciously. Now, how well your moon is aspected, as in how your moon plays with the other planets in your chart, is going to determine a number of things, including how you formed a relationship and the nature of the relationship to your primary female caregiver. This, of course, in most cases, is our mother. Sometimes this can actually be a grandmother as well. Very rarely it can happen where the moon shows more of the father when the father is really, really lunar or very feminine in the family structure, you know. So if the father is extremely lunar and feminine, then in that rare case, the moon can represent the father. But in majority of cases, the moon represents the mother or our primary female figure. And what kind of relationship we form with our primary female caregiver also means what kind of messages that we get from her, right? And these are not messages like you're this or you're that, not the ones that you've been told, but rather the subconscious messages that you receive from her in the way that she received it from her mother and so on and so forth. So in a lot of ways, the moon sign shows us our female lineage, our feminine lineage, our mother lineage. And that in turn is going to determine our emotional nature and how we express our emotional nature in our relationships and our ability to give and receive nurturing love. For example, a moon that has challenging relationships in the chart and is not placed well in a chart can indicate a challenging relationship with the mother, or that the inner child in you did not receive the nurturing that it wanted from the mother figure in your life. In a man's case, this can create a lack of trust with women, and that will of course affect his relationships with women because he doesn't trust them. Conversely, if a moon is well placed, then it shows that the messages received in childhood were positive and that the inner child received a lot of loving support from the mother figure, and that will create a level of trust and an ability to trust emotional relationships, especially with women. Those with strong moon placements in their charts turn out to be very creative and intuitive, And depending on where the moon is placed, they can even become public figures. The moon is a reflector. So people who have strong moons in their charts find it easy to project their image onto the public and so receive attention from the public. Both negative and positive can happen with that, again, depending on what the moon's doing. And they're able to deal with the public at large because of that. So such is the influence of the moon in our chart. So what does your moon say about you? Leave your moon sign in the comments and we can have a chat about it. And of course, if you want to find out more about your moon sign in details, book an astrology reading with me by going to my website and clicking on the Astro Readings tab. All right, that's all I had for the astrological segment of our episode today. And also that brings to a conclusion our episode 3 of Life is Healing with Lobaina. The next episode will be released on May 21st, so stay tuned for that. And don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. And thank you so much for listening and tuning in. Bye-bye, till next time.